It's hard to know what Ahmad Shaukat would have made of last week's parliamentary elections in Iraq. Happiness, perhaps, at the exercise of democracy, or maybe despair at the number of votes for sectarian and ethnic parties. Ahmad Shaukat was among those Iraqi intellectuals who thought about his country's future while he was a professor in his hometown of Mosul, when he was in Saddam's torture chambers during years of internal exile in Iraq, and when he spoke after the invasion of Iraq about his countrymen and democracy with reporter Michael Goldfarb.
They don't know how to have a clear dialogue between themselves or how to deal with the other countries, how to deal with the other peoples, how to negotiate between themselves. I hope I will be able to do something.
The life and death of Ahmad Shaukat is the subject of both the documentary film from which we took that excerpt and from Michael Goldfarb's book, Ahmad's War, Ahmad's Peace, Surviving Under Saddam, Dying in the New Iraq. Many of you will remember Michael Goldfarb as NPR's correspondent in London and points abroad for many years, and he joins us now from the studios of the BBC's broadcasting house in London. Michael, good to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, Neil.
You described Ahmad as a man who spent his whole life arguing. What do you mean by that?
He was just one of nature's argumentative souls. We all know people like this. You know, he's the guy who sees things very clearly and has a kind of purity of vision that when he sees the inevitable compromises that come with daily life, he argues about. So you know, this is not the truth anymore. He was a grassroots politician. But he himself knew that he was like the most impolitic person going. And coinciding with that, Neil, was he was one of nature's gifted teachers. He could teach you, he could hold you in thrall about any subject and make you understand and learn things. I mean, he taught me a great deal about Iraq, its ethnic and sectarian mix, and the history, particularly of northern Iraq, where he was from, Mosul. But when it came down to it, he was also one of nature's arguers, and particularly about points of conscience, and his conscience was open to the world.
You met him as your translator, a man you hired in Iraq to help you deal with the differences of language. But you mentioned he was a teacher, originally a teacher of anatomy in his hometown, Mosul.
That's right. I mean, Neil, in the 50s and 60s, as countries came out from colonial rule, young people of intellectual promise were steered towards the sciences by the state because people, the governments wanted to catch up. They felt they needed to catch up technologically. So Ahmad was steered towards scientific study, and he also knew that there would be work for him. He didn't come from a family with money if he, you know, studied sciences. But his deep avocation was literature, and he always wrote. He wrote essays. He wrote novels, short stories, poetry, and journalism. And, you know, in another society, if he'd grown up in America, he might have studied, you know, English and taught English at college instead of studying anatomy and teaching anatomy at a medical school.
He survived. He did some things that poked fun at Saddam Hussein, not a healthy thing to do in Iraq in those days, and ended up in Iraq's torture chamber, survived that, survived leaving his hometown and going into northern Iraq, the town of Erbil, where you met him, and living in a sort of internal exile. One of those Iraqi intellectuals awaiting the day when things would change, and you were with him on the day that things did change.
That's right. It was an extraordinary experience. I mean, to experience liberation through somebody's eyes, who suffered terribly under a dictator, was astonishing. And I stayed with him for the 3 weeks that it took for the U.S. to overthrow Saddam. He was able to go back to Mosul, only an hour's drive from Erbil, which is in northern Iraq, Kurdistan. And there was never really a battle for Mosul. I mean, the regime simply disappeared in the middle of the night. And we went back, and the joy and, I mean, disbelief, the sheer disbelief that the monster had finally been overthrown was something that seeped out of every pore. And then as the day went on and we saw the city being looted, and it was completely sacked by its own citizens and by the Kurds who came down to help out and get some of their own back, the joy went away. And we went down to the central square in Mosul, in Dawasa, where the National Bank's main branch was. And I went off to record a gun battle. Some guys were trying to steal all the money, and some Kurdish Peshmerga were trying to prevent it. And Ahmed got involved in an extraordinary argument about the meaning of democracy right there and then, with somebody from Mosul who was cursing out George Bush and, you know, saying the Americans have ruined our country and so on, and George Bush is an idiot or whatever he was saying. Mm-hmm. And Ahmed got involved in a shouting match and, you know, trying to tell him, you know, look, democracy means something more than just shouting any old stupid thing that comes to mind. You have responsibilities as citizens. It's up to Iraqis to stop the looting and not destroy their own country. And it was quite an extraordinary experience that day.
We're talking with writer and broadcaster Michael Goldfarb, the author of Ahmed's War, Ahmed's Peace, Surviving Under Saddam, Dying in the New Iraq. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Michael, let me ask you, I thought Dexter Filkins, the correspondent for the New York Times, has been in Iraq a lot over the past several years. In a review of your book, talked about there was a group of Iraqi intellectuals hungering for democracy who, after the fall of Saddam saw their opportunity and rushed in to fill the void and to teach their fellow citizens about what democracy meant, its obligations as well as its liberties, and that Ahmed was one of them. And that, like Ahmed, many of them are now dead.
That's true. I mean, the security situation in Iraq, which continues to be pretty grim, meant that those who stepped forward, and you know, this is at grassroots, Neil. I mean, these aren't guys who went off to form political parties. Mm-hmm. These were teachers and lawyers and judges and doctors, the men of respect in their communities, who argued in favor of working with the occupation, that this would bring the country to a better place. You know, when the U.S. knocked over Saddam so quickly, many of the people who were involved in, you know, arresting people and torturing people, they were still out there in the street. And as it became clear that the U.S. occupation was not going to be able to control the country, that the insurgency would grow and grow, these ex-thugs resume their careers. And in the night, they come for people, they intimidate people, they murder people. And, you know, as 1 year became 2 years of these conditions, those who couldn't get out of the country or who hadn't been murdered, they begin to grow quiet because ultimately, you know, your safety is important. You have people have families that they need to protect. And so much of the good people have been either intimidated into silence or murdered.
Before Ahmed's murder, and you don't know who did it, and you suspect we never will, but before his murder, he talked about the necessity of reaching a people who had been so terrorized under Saddam that they were not ready for the situation after he fell.
That's right. I think that one of the key things, on the day that Mosul fell, I went to his brother-in-law's house, and his brother-in-law was also a university teacher, and some people from the neighborhood turned up, and they were, you know, professional men. And Ahmed turned to me after a while and said, they say Saddam is here. I said, what, are you kidding me? Where? In Mosul? In a mosque. I said, you know that's not true. He said, no, it's not true. But this is the infection of dictatorism. Those were his words. Hmm. People had been in a nightmare for a quarter of a century, and overnight were released from a nightmare. And, you know, Neil, when we wake up from a nightmare, you know, you're not quite sure if you're even in your own bed. So you go into the bathroom, you splash cold water on your face, and you still feel a little weird. Now, imagine being inside a totalitarian nightmare for a quarter of a century, and then suddenly the U.S. comes. And remember, most of these people thought the U.S. was coming in 1991 at the end of the first Gulf War, and they'd been disappointed. And, I mean, Ahmed used to say this to me, you know, even in the middle of the war, when it was clear that you know, Saddam really was going, he said, I don't believe this. And you talk to Kurds, and people had a hard time believing what was going on around them. And then suddenly this totalitarian state disappeared, and people had been released from a nightmare, and the world was surreal to them. And they didn't quite know how to behave.
That moment is captured in Michael Goldfarb's book, Ahmad's War, Ahmed's Peace, Surviving Under Saddam, Dying in the New Iraq. And Michael Goldfarb was kind enough to join us today from the studios of the BBC at Broadcasting House in London. Michael, thanks very much for being with us, and happy Christmas to you.
And same to you, Neil.
Michael Goldfarb with us from London. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.